Recently, I sent out a survey to my email list and I asked if I could answer one question on my podcast for you, what would it be? And y'all, I got so many good questions. Like, I am just tickled that hundreds and hundreds of you took the time to fill out this survey. And it was just so helpful for me to see what you all really wanted and needed to hear. So really, over the next few months, all of my episodes are going to be formulated around answering your specific questions. And today's episode is a question that came up based on many, many people kind of all saying the same thing. And it was this idea of, how do I increase my students' retention of the content? But especially for those really, really dense science topics, like how do I get them to really get it and remember it? And so I'm going to help you with this in this episode. I'm going to start with a word of encouragement for you about this and then hopefully end with a ton of practical tips and specific examples for you that you can use now, but especially in next year, school year and all the years to come. So without further ado, let's dive in. This is Secondary Science Simplified, a podcast for secondary science teachers who want to engage their students and simplify their lives. I'm Rebecca Joyner from It's Not Rocket Science. As a high school science teacher turned curriculum writer, I am passionate about helping other science teachers love their jobs, serve their students, and do it all in only 40 hours a week. Are you ready to rock the time you spend in your classroom and actually have a life outside of it? You are in the right place, teacher friend. Let's get to today's episode. Okay, first, like I said at the start, I want to give you a little bit of a note of encouragement. If this is a question or a topic that resonates with you, I'm sorry and I'm not surprised. Like, I just think that our students now have worse retention of knowledge than they ever have before. And I think there's a lot that goes into this. I'm just kind of, you know, these are just my own personal theories. But from what I've seen, I feel like a huge part of this is students having years of abnormal learning due to the pandemic. I think it's due to technology just absolutely demolishing their attention spans. I speak from experience. My husband tried to watch a movie with me the other day, and I think I was asleep by 47 minutes because Netflix has conditioned me to only be able to handle like 47 minutes of content at a time before the next episode rolls. Like, I can't do longer than that. So I think that has become a huge problem here with their attention spans. And then I also just feel like when I look around at high school students in my life right now, they have way more going on in their lives than I did when I was in high school. Like, I think they're super distracted in school because of how much is going on outside of their lives. Like, I was thinking about this the other day as I was talking to an old student who's dealing with some, you know, friend drama and this happened and I was left out of this and whatever. Like, I was thinking back to when I was in high school, and of course there was like drama with your friends. There always is. But I think the thing that made it really different is like we didn't know what was happening outside of school because we weren't that connected. Yes, we may have had phones and we could call and ask someone's dad if we could talk to our friend, but we weren't constantly aware of what other people were doing that we weren't invited to. And so I just think they have so much more awareness of the world, of their friends and their lives outside of school, of what they may be missing out on how they may be realizing how much more different they are from people than they maybe thought. And I just think their minds are so saturated with this level of awareness and also just consuming so much content all the time and all these different avenues. Like, it's just crazy. I mean, I can genuinely remember writing papers and using my dad's printed encyclopedia, like A to Z books. Like, you would go and you would find book L if you had a research paper about lions and you would read it and write from the encyclopedia. And now it's just like information overload. So all that to say, I just want to encourage you that like, I don't think this is a personal problem. I don't think you're a bad teacher, that your students just aren't remembering stuff and it's all your fault. Like, I just think there's a lot that's going into student populations right now and it's affecting their ability to pay attention and then thus retain information. Okay, so what do we do about this? Here are my best tips for you. And I think The hard thing with this episode is a lot of these tips are going to be best introduced at the start of the school year. And so we're going to be really proactive in this episode. I want you to start thinking about next school year already, even though I know this is airing in February. These are the things that I love spending my last quarter in the classroom assessing and really thinking about and planning for the next year and really being strategic, okay? There will be some practical right away tips that you can use too, so don't worry. All right, first, my best advice for this is introduce those dense topics as soon as possible. I think sometimes we like to start with the lighter topics so that then we're kind of easing students into being back in school and, you know, getting their minds warmed up before we dive into deep stuff. I am a huge fan of starting with the hard stuff right away because then you get to bring it up all year long, okay? You introduce something in August, you're going to talk about it in September, October, November, December. You're going to constantly keep talking about it. This is one reason why I absolutely love in biology, starting with the micro and moving to the macro. One of the first things I teach in biology within the first 2 weeks of biology is macromolecules. And I tell my students, every single thing we will learn this year comes back to one of these four macromolecules. And it's all we talk about. Macromolecules used to be one of the hardest topics for my students. It was their lowest test average ever, was always the biochem test where we covered macromolecules. They couldn't keep monomers and polymers straight. Like they just had such a hard time. And it was because we were focusing so much on just getting them to memorize all these little facts. So what's the function? What's the monomer? What's the polymer? What's the energy content of a carbohydrate? Like they were memorizing all these facts about macromolecules. They weren't seeing that everything in biology could honestly be argued to come back to a macromolecule. Like that's how dense macromolecules are. And you don't have to get into all the biochemistry of them to make them be the most relevant topic of the entire school year. So when thinking about introducing these dense topics earlier, I would really encourage you rethink your sequence. I have an entire podcast episode on this about strategizing your sequence in episode 80. I think it would really, really help you with this so that you can bring it up. I'm not kidding. I could argue with anyone right now about this concept of macromolecules because I just think it's so important. And none of my students struggled with it when they got to the end of the year. It's another reason too, when I think of the cell. I think for the longest time, again, students got in this trap of having to memorize the organelles and what each one did and what they looked like. Can I identify it in a picture? But my students didn't actually understand how the cell, really everything in the cell, is working together to make proteins. That's what it is. And once I started teaching the parts of the cell with the context of its every single thing in here is working together for the sake of being able to communicate between each other and make proteins. It just has so much more context. And then we're talking about proteins again when we get to protein synthesis. We're talking about proteins again when we get, you know, into heredity and we're looking at phenotypes and how things are, the physical traits we see. Like it just comes up over and over. So really rethink your sequence. You may not agree with me about macromolecules being like the central idea and dense topic of biology, but think of what you think that is and make that your very first thing that you teach. Okay, another example of this is in chemistry. My old chemistry teacher, who I've interviewed on this podcast multiple times, in one of the episodes I interviewed him on, he talked about how all chemistry could really be boiled down to electronegativity. And I've never forgotten that he said that. And it's truly something that comes up over and over again. And when I wrote my chemistry curriculum for the last 18 months that I wrote it, that was a theme that I thought of over and over again. And y'all, I cannot tell you how tickled I was. I got this review about the chemistry curriculum. I just have to read this couple sentences for you from it. It made me so happy. This teacher wrote, "One thing about this curriculum I find particularly helpful is how certain important topics, for example, bonding spectrum or electronegativity, are introduced and then revisited and refined with new information and application multiple times throughout multiple units. This helps my students make connections and develop a deeper understanding that pays dividends." Like I read that and I squealed because I was like, this is exactly what I'm saying. I want to introduce something. Again, like the idea of that bonding is a spectrum and it's not these different categories of covalent, ionic, metallic. Like that is a theme of chemistry that has a lot of depth to it that I want to bring up over and over and over again because it's going to impact so many things. similar to electronegativity, similar to intermolecular forces. Like you could make your whole chemistry course around this theme of the difference between intramolecular forces and intermolecular forces. I would argue it's still going to come back down to electronegativity, but I'm not trying to make this a podcast about that. So my first thing I just want to encourage you with is rethink your sequence. Let's bring those dense topics, those topics that your students always struggle through, the ones that you kind of grit your teeth and just get through the unit because you're like, oh, this is always a hard one. Let's just get through it. Let's not do that anymore. Let's teach that at the beginning of the year. Let's see how it kind of maybe could change the entire course of the course by teaching in a different order, by putting those macromolecules at the beginning of the year. Okay, now, maybe if you're a chemistry teacher, you're thinking, well, stoics the hardest unit and you can't teach that first because there's so much background info that they need. This is where I would argue that I am one of those people that kind of loves, I know some people call it like unit zero. I love putting a bunch of math in your first chemistry unit. I know a lot of people will argue the other way of like, let's hold off on the math. Like it gets too aggressive, like teaching them a dimensional analysis and sig figs at the start of the year, only to not really touch it again until January when we get to stoic. I would argue the opposite. I think you need to teach it at the very beginning of the year so that it is in their brains so that then as we're doing more and more quantitative things, even if we're not directly doing stoic at the beginning of the year, we're doing a lot of other things that are going to make them think critically and numerically. So let's start getting their brains working that way. Let's not make the first time that they ever, ever think about a conversion factor be at the start of your stoichiometry unit. Okay, so wow, I went on a tangent about that, but I just feel super, super passionate about this. Dense topics first. Now, I know, again, we're mid-year. You're like, I can't do anything about this now. This is something for the future. And the other reason I'm really passionate about this is your students need that repetition. I think we have unrealistic expectations of what we expect them to be able to retain. And so I think instead of being frustrated that they're not remembering things, we need to be more and more and more repetitive. Everything I even do with my children is that they know is a product of repetition, of me saying the same things over and over, of me saying hands are for helping, not for hurting. So that when one of my friends smacks the other one in the face and they look at me, they know exactly what I'm going to say. I'm going to say hands are for helping, not for hurting. Make it right. And then they'll go and they'll apologize and they will do what it takes to make it right with their sibling. Like, they have these little phrases that I say over and over. Our kids need that repetition. Our students need that repetition, okay? So really use this time. Really think, like, what are the topics that are like these central themes that could be the theme for the year? And another practical encouragement here, and this is one you can start with right now, is start drilling in those basic ideas with songs, with memory phrases, with what I call refrains. Okay, I call these refrains, things that you're saying over and over again. It doesn't even have to be catchy, okay? One of the ones I do like in anatomy is form dictates function. I say that all the time. Form dictates function. Form dictates function. If they can't remember what something does, I shout at them, form dictates function. They start looking at its form and then start interpreting, okay, what is its function most likely? You know, that one has like a little bit of nice alliteration, but one of mine in biology is proteins are everything. Proteins are everything. It's just something I say over and over again. It's a refrain. They start to hear it so much that even if they can't remember what it means, they know that's what you said. And when they're sitting on that AP exam or whatever, they're thinking proteins are everything. It all comes back to proteins, or it all comes back to electronegativity. Say those things over and over. Come up with some of those. I like to say, teach in a way that your students can instantly mock you. Like your students could dress up as you for Spirit Week, one of the theme days, and everyone would instantly know that's Mrs. Joyner. The way that she's talking, the things that she's saying, you know, whatever. Make it so that they can instantly mock you because you've been that repetitive in their faces about this stuff, okay? Even one thing I always say is if I ever hear a student complaining, I always say, sounds like a personal problem and you're a problem solver. And my students know that. Like they have all heard me say, sounds like a personal problem. And then someone else will shout out, you're a problem solver. Like you can solve this. And so I just think drilling those things in, being repetitive to the point at like it being ad nauseum that people can mock you is the goal here. One last one in biology, that I especially emphasize in AP biology. So I actually teach AP biology in a different sequence than I do like general or honors. In AP biology, I actually started with evolution. And that was because I ended biology general and biology honors with evolution. And so I really think another way you could argue biology is that it all comes back to evolution. And I like to start the year with that in AP, so then we're always referring back to it. And one of my refrains there is populations evolve, individuals don't. And I've said that so many times, like there's going to be any student on an AP bio exam that's taken my class who gets any sort of FRQ about evolution is going to be hearing my voice in their head say, populations evolve, individuals don't. Okay, so be really repetitive. And in that repetition, in that drilling of these basics, in that writing of refrains for your class, make sure that when you're writing your lesson plans and you're considering the instructional resources you're going to use, are your students seeing the content? Are they hearing it? Are they feeling it? Are they being it? Are they doing it? I want my students to experience the content in as many ways possible. They're not just hearing it. And then they're not just seeing it. They're really engaging with it. Can I get them out of their seats, acting out the kinetic molecular theory so they really get how, you know, these molecules are moving? Can I get them doing this in a lab format? Can I get them making a model of the structure of a long bone in anatomy so that they can really visualize it and hold it in their hands? Okay, we want them to experience it so many different ways. It should not just be coming in the form of notes and then reinforcement in the form of like a study guide or practice. Okay, another question I saw come up a few times that's like adjacent to this topic is people asking like, how do you get students to actually remember what you talk about in your guided notes? And I would almost say like, I don't worry about it, you know? I use notes as a tool to like introduce a topic or to follow up from a lab and reinforce an idea. Or I think of notes as like a platform for discussion with my students and giving them a space to ask questions, dive deeper in that understanding. But I don't expect my students to remember things from our guided note experience. I cannot tell you one time that I sat in a class and wrote notes and have like a meaningful memory from that of like, oh yeah, the teacher said this. Like the only reason maybe I would have remembered something is if the teacher had an outrageous story or a demonstration or whatever. My memorable learning experiences are, again, certain teachers I had, their refrains that I remember still in my head to this day. And it's those labs or those projects or those, someone asked that question, we found this discovery in our research. Like those are the things I really remember. Those are the things your students are going to remember too. So really be strategic with those instructional resources you are selecting. Another thing I would say too that's really practical that you could start right now is long form connection questions, okay? Even essays if you want to do that on every test that you have. Always bring it back to the beginning. One of my themes in anatomy is teaching the students that like the body, the human body is all of these systems working together for a common function. And so one of my favorite things to do on every anatomy test, and even if I don't have room for it on the test to be an official test question, it's a great like next day follow-up warm-up question. It's a great bonus question is, okay, based on the body systems we've learned now, give me three examples of how they work together to maintain the homeostasis and keep the body functioning. So, you know, after our first two units, they may only know 2 to 3 body systems. After 4 units, they might know 5 to 6 body systems. So each time the concept in that question gets built upon, you keep expanding and bringing back that connection over and over again. I love that. Now, those also, I'm not going to lie, those questions suck to grade, and I get it. So another thing I would say too is cumulative tests. This is something I did in biology. And you know, in a lot of subjects we teach, like chemistry, there's a lot that's cumulative. Like the test may not explicitly be like, this is a cumulative test, but so much of it builds on itself. Like in chemistry, you have to know things from previous tests in order to be successful on future tests. But for biology specifically, because it was an EOC course for my students, they were taking the standardized in a course exam. Every test and the ones in my curriculum now is written in a cumulative way. So I actually, for biology, I specifically divide the questions up by concept. So most tests cover 3 concepts and then there'll be a cumulative section. And I did that because it gave me really great data for what concepts need remediation, and or they're nailing the three concepts that we study for this test, but people are failing the cumulative section. We need to stop and do more remediation here. So I really, really recommend, it's a very practical way to assess your students, is add a cumulative section to your tests. Pull questions from other tests and put them back on the future tests again. Make sure, like, if you all miss this the first time, you're not going to miss this when you see it again on a future test in a cumulative section. I liked doing this too because when we went over tests, my students really paid attention because they wanted to make sure they understood what they got wrong, because they knew I was going to repeat questions and they knew that I was very likely to repeat the questions that the most people missed. Okay, so I love that cumulative section. And then the other great thing about it too is, again, let's say you're like, well, they are terrible at remembering. So you take the test, you see you got a 60% average on your unit test, okay? Well, then you go back and you look and it's like, it was all this cumulative section. The average is a 78 if I got rid of the cumulative section. Okay, then put the test in out of that. Curve it based on the cumulative section if you want to. But when you separate it like that, by concept, and have the cumulative section separate and labeled, it really helps you to see what they are and are not remembering. And it helps you know what needs to be remediated. So I really recommend that. And then my last two things I'll say is, first, depth over breadth. Y'all, I talk about this in episode 116, which is all about what to do if you're behind schedule. And I just feel really passionate about this. Really evaluate if you have to get through it all. Another question I'm seeing a lot of is like, how do we possibly get through all the standards if we're teaching, you know, a semester block or a 90-minute schedule, AB, you know, how do we get through them? And my question back to you is, do you really have to? Like, yes, your district told you teach all the standards, but do you actually have to? If there's a standardized EOC at the end of the year or an AP biology exam, I get that. But if there's not, what matters most? Does it matter most that your students can leave your class and be like, Miss Joyner covered every single NGSS high school life science standard. I'm so glad. No, what matters most is that they understand that proteins matter, that proteins are everything, that everything could be boiled down to macromolecules, really proteins. But if you want to make it even more broad, every single macromolecule, like, I want them to know those dense, big picture concepts, themes that tie everything together. I want them to know that more than I care that we got through HSLS 1-1 through 4-7, okay? That's what I care about, and that's what I hope that you care about too, and you can kind of take the pressure off. Like, okay, we're not going to get through all the standards, so what? So what? Again, exception if you have standardized tests. If you don't, what does it matter? Like, will it really impact them going from your biology class to then chemistry next year that they didn't get through all the biology standards? Will it really matter when they take an elective environmental science class their senior year that you didn't get through all the biology standards? Probably not, because most teachers are not expecting their students to retain anything anyway. So they're not going to expect your students to remember anything about the biogeochemical cycles when they get back to environmental science, and they're going to teach it like it's brand new anyway. Okay, so give yourself some grace there, all right? I really want you to give yourself some grace there. Focus on these being repetitive and diving deeper and taking the time to do these extra instructional resources to really dig deep and help them retain what you really care the most about them retaining. And then the last thing I'll say is this, go back and listen to episodes 80 through 88. This past July 2023, I did a series called Curriculum Design 101, and I walk through step-by-step how I write and design curriculum. And I love the whole methodology of UBD, which is understanding by design. And the general premise is that you're designing instructional resources with the end in mind. But the way that I really have internalized and interpreted that for my own curriculum design process is, when I'm writing units, I'm constantly circling back to, why does this matter? What's the big picture idea? I'm never just sitting down and writing out a unit in order of like, we do this and then we do this and then I write the notes and then we do the lab and then we do the practice and then we take the test. Like, every single thing I do and I create, I then go back, I refer back to make sure, did we hit this in the notes? Did we hit this on a practice page? Is it covered on the study guide? Then do I have the test question on it? Like, I'm really looking, I'm circling back over and over and over again to make sure that it's all aligned and it's all informing everything else. And so I want to encourage you to do the same as you're considering your own curriculum and maybe writing your own resources for your students. And y'all, I know this is hard stuff. And most of these tips that I suggested are not helpful if you're 60 or 75% done for your school year. But know that there are things you can do now. Like, go ahead and just add a cumulative section from now on. Go ahead and think about some refrains that you can start saying in your class these last few months over and over and see if your kids remember them. But really, go ahead and get a jump start on strategizing for next year and how you can maybe structure your course to do this a little bit better and more naturally for your students. Okay. And if you want to check out any of those episodes I mentioned so many other podcast episodes, head to the show notes at itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/episode119. And I'll have all of those linked there for you for easy access. Okay. Now, if you haven't already, make sure you leave a review and leave a review if you're excited to maybe rethink your sequence for next year, start hitting those dense topics sooner. Or maybe if you have a great refrain you use in your classroom already, I would love to hear about it. So leave me a review. And if you've left a review and you just want to tell me, go ahead and shoot me a DM on Instagram. And then the last thing I'll say is this. If you're bummed that you didn't get to do the podcast survey before I closed it out, I'm still always wanting to know what questions you want to hear about on the podcast. And I have a huge spreadsheet I'm keeping track. So anytime you have a question, just DM me on Instagram at its.not.rocket.science and just say, hey, I think this would be a great question to answer on the podcast and shoot me with your question. I would love to hear from you. All right, teacher friends, that wraps up today's episode. If you're looking for an easy way to start simplifying your life as a secondary science teacher, head to itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/challenge to grab your classroom reset challenge. And guess what? It's totally free. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you here next week. Until then, I'll be rooting for you, teacher friend.